Okay, so just so you know, this is about energy storage, not data storage. So what I'm going to talk about today is a reconfigurable battery array architecture, which is able to virtualize battery resources in the same way as computing network and storage resources are virtualized today. So we all know that renewable energy plays an important role in the reduction of global carbon emission. But renewable energy requires energy storage in order to become a sustainable energy supply. Unfortunately, the chemical batteries are still way too expensive for now. So there's one curve. The green one shows the price projection of batteries in the next couple of years. And then another curve, the red one, is according to US DOE's projection, the price points of batteries that have to come down to in order for them to become viable, economically viable choice for energy storage. So there's a significant gap between what we have right now and what we need to be. One promising way to address that gap is to use retired batteries coming from electrical vehicles. But one problem with this retired battery is that they have widely different operating characteristics. So existing energy storage systems do not like heterogeneous battery cells, and that's the problem that we are trying to solve. So the main pain point is the battery cell heterogeneity in a large battery array. So we propose the idea of RABAR, like reconfigurable array of inexpensive battery, is that the idea is that what if we can allow the batteries in a large battery array to be connected in an arbitrary topology, and this inter-battery topology can be reconfigurable through software in the field at the runtime. Let's say we computer scientists think of reconfigurability of a network is a matter of course, but in that particular community, that's not the case. In a power electronics, you cannot just reconfigure things as you see fit. Now, once you have this reconfigurable inter-battery connectivity, you can solve many problems due to heterogeneity. For example, weaker cells. Like if you have a large battery array and some of the cells are weak, then it's possible they will render the entire battery array unusable. So for example, you have three batteries that are connected in series in this case, and let's say the second battery is bad. Now in a traditional way, the entire chain is useless because the second battery is bad. Now what if we can bypass the second battery? Then the other two batteries can continue operating. So that's cool, right? That's one way. Or you can reduce unnecessary DC to DC conversion. So once again, you have three batteries that are connected in series. And let's say each battery can give out 3.2 volt. And with three batteries connected in series, you can give out 9.6 volt. But let's say the required, you have an electric load request that only need 6.2 volt. So you need a DC to DC conversion from 9.6 volt to 6.2 volt if you use three batteries. But what if we can just say, let's just use two batteries to satisfy this request, even though you have three batteries that are connected in series. But let's say we just use two. Then you only need to convert from 6.4, that's two times 3.2, 6.4 to 6.2. So the extent of energy conversion is reduced, and the associated energy loss is also reduced. And then you have the notion of internal balancing. In this example shows that. Let's say you have two columns of batteries. In column one, you have three healthy batteries connected in series. And in column two, you also have three batteries, but one of them is bad, and you bypass that, right? So if you connect these two columns together, column one would try to charge column two. So the electrons would go from column one to column two. This is known as internal balancing. They try to balance that. So you keep on charging it until the aggregate voltage level of column one more or less equal to column two. That's just the way it works, how electronics works. This internal balancing incurs energy loss and really does nothing because it just makes these two columns voltage level the same, but it doesn't really do any extra work to the outside world. So we can try to avoid this kind of internal balancing by doing, for example, we can bypass the entire column two. We can say, you are somewhat weak right now, I'm going to bench you. Just sit tight and then let the column one do most of the work. Until column one's voltage level drops to the same level as column two, and then we connect them. And from this point on, column one and column two can go out and service incoming electric load requests and so on, right? And that's another way to use reconfigurability, right? So with this reconfigurable inter-battery connectivity, now we can enable virtualization. We can enable battery virtualization. So the idea is very simple. You give me a load request characterized by the required voltage level and the current amount. Then a battery virtualization system is going to take this request and dynamically compose a virtual battery, just like virtual storage, virtual network, virtual whatever, right? And you can create a virtual battery by properly selecting a right set of batteries and then connecting them in the proper way. And to satisfy this particular request while maximizing the entire array's so-called per charge usage time or total lifetime. And this virtualization operation can actually be applied to both discharging operation. Discharging operation means electric loads actually draw energy from the battery packs. That's discharging. As well as charging operation, when the electric sources actually charge the battery packs and so on. So it can actually go both ways. So in the next three slides, I'm going to talk about three different RAYBAR architecture, each with increasing degree of flexibility and reconfigurability over the previous one. The simplest one is RAYBAR 1. So it is meant to sort of service a single electric load request, so it's a single output. And it consists of N columns of battery modules that are connected in series. And within each column, it contains M batteries, modules connected in series, right? So the N columns connected in parallel, and then M columns connected in series in each column. And each of the column can actually be completely bypassed. If I don't want it, I can completely bypass the entire column. And each battery can be enabled or bypassed with respect to the associated column, like B1, B2, B3, B4, B5. Like, let's say B2, we can enable it or we can bypass it. When we enable it, it participates in this column. When we bypass it, it's as if it's no op. It doesn't exist. That's what it means to bypass it. So that's the first level of RAYBAR architecture. The second level of the RAYBAR architecture is slightly more complicated. The first three conditions are the same, except that now each battery could be enabled, bypassed, or cut off from the associated column. When a battery is cut off, it means all the batteries above it are isolated from the batteries below it. That's what it means to cut off, right? And more importantly, it provides inter-column switch. Now, previously, each column operates independently. Now we can allow you to adjoin the resources in adjacent column and then combine them and apply them to service a particular electric load request. With this inter-column switching, you can do things like this. Now, you have two columns of battery. You can say, I just want to take the first four of that column and use it in some way. And then we take the fifth battery of the third column and then combine it with the fourth column. For example, you can do that, or you can do that. You can do it, you can combine them in a certain way, you know, parallel connected and serial connected and so on. That's another way to use it. These are all allowed in RAYBAR 2. Now, in RAYBAR 3, this is the most general sort of version of the reconfigurable battery array architecture. It is meant to service multiple outputs simultaneously, and it allows arbitrary subset of batteries to be connected in an arbitrary fashion. Right? So, for example, in this case, we can say I want B3 and B4 are connected in parallel first, and then the result is connected with B1 and B2 in series. So that's like that one. It's almost like your NOR equation, like the thing that you learn in digital logic design. You can use a more or less a similar notation to describe that. Or you can say I want B2 and B3 are parallel connected first, B1 and B4 are parallel connected first, and then the result of the two are series connected and so on. And you can do this for all kinds of things. Now, of course, this gives you the most generality. But from our hardware guy's point of view, this is very, very difficult to implement in order to do something like this. The main thing is that now, in previous two architecture, each battery belongs exactly one column. But here we need a battery to be associated with K columns. Like, so for example, in this case, B1 can join any of the column, O1 plus, O1 minus, O2 plus, O2 minus, and so on. Each of these is a column. And here we are saying that B1 can actually join any one of these columns. But previously, each battery can only join one column. That's the difference. And for a battery to be able to be associated with multiple columns in terms of circuit implementation, that's a big jump. That's why this is sort of like a theoretical purpose. We can say that's the ultimate form of reconfigurable battery array. But in terms of implementation complexity, it's a significant increase. So for the rest of the talk, I'm going to focus only on RayBar1. That's the only thing that we implemented. Now, to implement RayBar1, we need two technical building blocks. The first building block is to be able to implement this enable bypass. It sounds easy, but it isn't. The reason it isn't is that, first of all, we need this switching to be online. I cannot turn off the entire battery array and then switch it. The switching has to take place while the battery array is providing service. All right, that's one, that's online. And the second property is that it has to provide constant current. While a battery is transitioning between enable and bypass, the current going through the column, the associated column, has to remain constant. I cannot have any disruption, like going up or there's a blurb or something. We cannot allow that. Now, the way it works is like the figure on the left. There are actually little two electronic switches, S1 and S2. If S1 is turned on and S2 is turned off, then it's enabled. This particular battery is part of the column. If S1 is turned off and S2 is turned on, then this battery is bypassed. It's no up. Nothing happened. And the trick is that how the circuit is supposed to monitor the degree to which S1 and S2 are turned on and off in such a way that the combined current going through both, the sum of the two current going through these two electronic switches remain constant. So there's a feedback loop implemented in that analog IC to implement that. And that's exactly what actually happened. And we actually built an ASIC to do exactly that on the right. So this provides what's known as online constant current switching between enable and bypass. And the second building block is a configuration control algorithm, or the virtualization algorithm, if you will. Now, you give me an electric load request, a voltage and a current. And I also know the state, in particular, the voltage and capacity of every battery in the array. And this algorithm is supposed to come up with a configuration that can best satisfy this particular electric load request while maintaining the long-term benefit of the entire array. So I'm not going to go into the details of this algorithm. Just think of it as a pretty generic, greedy resource allocation algorithm that we have for when you do storage, you know, sort of multi-dimensional bin packing kind of thing for storage virtualization and compute virtualization. Except that we take the following factors into consideration when we consider this each candidate configuration, the desirability of each candidate configuration. Depends on the following three factors. The first factor is the energy cost of the DC to DC conversion. In other words, the gap between the offered voltage level and the required voltage level. That's one. The other thing is the energy cost to switch from the current configuration to the target configuration. That's two. And the second factor is the most important. What we care about is that how likely it is to achieve better balancing of the capacities of the batteries in the array. That's what we want. We want to be able to balance the capacity of the batteries, right? So these three factors. And the second factor is the most important one. So we use these two building blocks to build the first RayBar1 prototype. So we have this, this prototype actually consists of 5x5 modules. It's a 5 columns, and each column consists of 5 modules. So total, there are 25 modules. Each module contains a battery, and these batteries are organized into a 4x2, sort of 4 columns and then 2 connected in series pattern. So total, we have about 200 batteries in this array. And each battery module, not each battery, each battery module is equipped with an enable bypass switch. So this figure shows a module, and then we put this enable bypass switch board on top of it, and then we connect them in series that forms one row, one column, and then we connect these columns in parallel, and that's the whole thing. Right. So now we can evaluate how good the first RedBar 1 prototype is. The first thing is we want to know how good this ASIC is. Now it claims to be able to do this constant current online switching. So we measure the time required to do the switching. So from enable to bypass, it takes about 30 microseconds. That's pretty small. And it incurs the energy cost about 1.8 millijoule. For from bypass to enable it, it takes about 50 microseconds, slightly longer, and it incurs a higher energy loss of 3 millijoule. These are all pretty good, because what we want to do, usually when we do this, we don't expect to switch this configuration that frequently, maybe like a couple of seconds, But we also want to use it in applications like drone. In drone, if you want to drive the motor, then the motor's speed is very, very high. So we need that transition to actually go pretty fast. And that's when this 30 microsecond and 50 microsecond come into handy. All right. And the other thing is we want to test the effectiveness of that configuration control algorithm. So we start with the RedBar 1 prototype with the following initial capacity distribution. Remember, the whole point of RedBar is to tackle sort of battery heterogeneity in the array. So if there's no heterogeneity, RedBar is useless. So the more heterogeneous the battery in the array are, then the higher the performance gain expected coming from the RedBar's reconfigurability. So that's what we come up with. This is a somewhat contrived example just to show that it has a significant performance gain. And then we run that particular RedBar prototype with that initial capacity distribution under 5 electric load traces, and then measure the total discharge service time. Like you have a RedBar with that initial capacity distribution, and then you feed it with electric load request and see how long you can service that particular trace. The longer, the better, right? So on this column, you show that we compare the fixed connectivity battery array with the reconfigurable battery array. So it shows the amount of time that it can service, and the number in the parentheses show the increase in the discharge service time. So it ranges from 82% to about 100%, right? So longer. So that means that it can indeed provide a sort of like better service when the initial capacity distribution is heterogeneous. And why is that? And if we see the third column, that shows the wasted capacity. That's at the end of the discharge service run, we measure the residual battery capacity. And the smaller, the better, right? That means that we squeeze out every bit of juice from the battery array. So if we can squeeze out to zero, that's the best, right? So again, you have two figures. One is for fixed connectivity, and the other is for reconfigurable battery array. So the number here is a reduction in wasted battery capacity. So you can see, using this figure to get an idea of why reconfigurable battery array can do so much better. So the left-hand side is the fixed connectivity battery array. The right-hand side is reconfigurable battery array. And each of the figures shows the capacity of each battery module in the RedBar prototype, how the capacity of each battery module evolves over time, right? So even though that initial capacity of the 25 battery modules are very different, on the left, the rate at which they decrease are more or less the same, right? And that's not good, right? Because if you are a weaker guy, you should not do that much work. The guy with a lot of resources should shoulder more load. That's the idea, right? So once you have this fixed connectivity, once the capacity of the weakest cells, battery module in the array are exhausted, then the entire battery array stops working. So you cannot really use it anymore. Whereas on the right, the reconfigurable algorithm kick in whenever it can. So what it tries to do is to converge the capacity of the battery arrays to the same number. So when the weaker guys don't have a lot of capacity to offer, the algorithm would bench the guys, and that those with a higher capacity to shoulder more load. So as time goes by, their capacity will converge, and whatever is left is the residual or wasted capacity. And that's why the reconfigurable battery array, it can provide a much higher discharge service time than the fixed connectivity battery arrays. So in summary, RayBar is designed to tackle a very specific problem, the battery cell or battery module heterogeneity in large battery array. And it does so by providing reconfigurable inter-battery connectivity at the runtime. So the main contribution of this work is we provide a taxonomy of reconfigurable battery array architecture. You can actually see there's a lot of room for exploration. We more or less just touched the tip of the iceberg. And then we have a really product-grade RayBar 1 prototype. This is not an academic prototype. This has been three versions into the working. So it features this online constant current enabled bypass switching. We have a special ASIC for that. And then it has an algorithm that tries to balance the capacity of the batteries in the array. And then we can empirically demonstrate the performance gain of RayBar 1 prototype using real-world electric load traces. In terms of future work, we can actually try to explore other application of RayBar 1, like I say, then energy storage. Like if you actually use a RayBar 1 lighting in drone to drive the motor, and then what do you need to do in order to take advantage of the up and down request in the electric loads. And we also want to study the marginal gains coming from the additional reconfigurability of RayBar 2 and RayBar 3 over RayBar 1. We just say that RayBar 2 and RayBar 3 actually provides more flexibility and reconfigurability, but how much performance gain you can get from that additional reconfigurability. That also seems to be an interesting avenues for further pursuit. Okay, so that's all I have. Thank you.
Dave, MIT Media Lab. Does the same approach work for charging as well?
Yes. So for those who are weak, they don't actually hold that much charge. So when they are full, we should ask them to step aside.
And would something like RayBar 2 or RayBar 3 allow for charging and discharging from the same grid at the same time?
Yes, because we can actually have a different path to charge this thing and then at the same time discharging if you have the connectivity to do it. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Babu Pillai from Intel. One other point with weak cells in particular is that they might be higher resistance or lower power. Does this technique also work for distributing power in this way?
Yes, so initial concern that we have is because you introduce that additional switch, that even when it's online, whether you would introduce additional online resistance, it turns out that's not an issue. That's our experience, yes. Turns out it's not an issue, yes.
So a second unrelated question. What about cost of such a module? How difficult is it to implement? You know, you have power transistors, et cetera.
My guys tell me it's about $1 a piece, that IC. It's about red range. It's not going to be astronomically expensive. It isn't, right? Yep.
Okay, my question is that since the capacity deviation that will be introduced the reconfiguration, and you need to a threshold to determine that what the definition is. So how to determine a suitable threshold that will, you know, that the frequency of reconfiguration that will be
right now now reconfiguration is done at two places. One is the initial load. The other is when the standard deviation among the capacity exceeds a certain threshold. And that's an empirical number. I don't have a good answer for that. Like, we don't have enough experience just yet to say which threshold is the best.